Welcome to the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, your daily podcast of the top education headlines from across the web. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Susie.
Good morning, and thank you to our very own Carl Hooker for that wonderful introduction that makes us sound so much cooler than we are. Today on the Breakdown with Susie Brooks and Mike Bronder, we're reading out the top education headlines from across the country so you don't have to. And we'll go into depth on four stories, including why K-12 schools aren't ready for AI's risks or benefits. That's from Laura Acion in eSchool News. We'll treat why teachers aren't prepared for today's school climate, sourced by Lisa McCoo and District Administration. And we'll also take a look at Eric Ofgang's 5 tips for teaching yoga in schools. That's from Tech and Learning. And of course, we'll talk about Biden's State of the Union from the perspective of LV Blad and Ed Week. But now some headlines with Ms. Brooks.
Awesome. Good morning, Mike. So glad to be here today. And this morning, we're looking at an article coming from Matt Selesnik from District Administration and covering two troubling developments. Leaders in Wichita, Kansas, and San Francisco are being forced to close multiple schools due to the budget shortfalls and concerns over having too many schools. We've seen this several times. We've been reading out the news. Wichita Public Schools will shutter 6 campuses to cover a $42 million deficit, while San Francisco's superintendent bluntly stated, "We must have fewer schools than we do now." And also from Selesnik, a new report commissioned by Uvalde city leaders has cleared local police of any blame in their widely criticized response to the 2022 Robb Elementary School shooting, despite acknowledging numerous failures during the tragic incident. I do have an article that I'm going to dive deeper into, and it's K-12 schools aren't ready for AI's risks or benefits. And it's an article, like you mentioned, coming from Laura Acione on eSchool News. So let me grab that one for us. And it goes on to say, perennial problems such as staffing issues and disruptive student behavior continue to plague districts and make it nearly impossible to address AI in the classroom. Almost all school superintendents, 97%, say that schools have an obligation to teach students how to use AI effectively and responsibly. Still, only 37% have a plan to incorporating AI instruction in the classroom, according to the 2024 Voice of the Superintendent survey released by education company EAB at the School Superintendent Association, AASA, National Conference on Education. 84% say teachers in their districts are concerned about students using generative AI to cheat and take shortcuts. EAB's report confirms that teacher shortages, behavioral disruptions, worsening student mental health, and other familiar challenges are so pervasive that exploring how new technologies such as AI can help doesn't even make the to-do list, says EAB Senior Director of K-12 Research, Ben Court. Superintendents indicated that staffing issues remain their most pressing problem. Roughly half, or 52%, say the number of teacher vacancies has increased over the past 12 months, and two-thirds, or 66%, say that the number of vacancies for non-instructional staff has increased. A risk in work absences among teachers further compounds the staffing shortages. Nearly half, or 48% of districts, report an increase in missed workdays among instructional staff over the past year, while 55% of districts report an increase in missed workdays among non-instructional staff. The survey also showed that there has been little relief from rising rates of disruptive behavior and student absenteeism that soared during the pandemic. 64% cite no improvement, while 42% say rates of absenteeism have increased over the past year. Similarly, 76% of superintendents report no improvement in disruptive behaviors, while 57% say disruptive incidents have increased. EAB continues to work with district leaders to share data and best practices on how to overcome these perennial problems so they can focus on teaching students the skills they need to succeed, Court continues. So it's interesting. It sounds like there's a lot of things in the way of getting to learn about AI, because that's quite the percentages that they're reporting on there. What do you have on your list this morning, Michael?
Susie, it's nice to hear some numbers behind those, around that kind of opinion on AI. So thanks for sharing that. For me, let's see. This is from NewJersey.com. In an unusual move, Livingston School District in New Jersey has decided to close early before a solar eclipse, citing concerns that students might look directly at the sun without proper eye protection during dismissal. The reasoning behind that is that dismissal is largely an unsupervised time for students, and they're concerned that the students will take that opportunity to look at the eclipse. So I think it's interesting reasoning. It's worth reading, and we have a link to that article at newjersey.com. You can find that link on k12leaders.com/breakdown. Also, some encouraging news from Washington, D.C. High-impact tutoring programs in the district are not only boosting academic performance, but also improving student attendance. You can find a link to that on k12leaders.com. We did a in-depth reading of that last week, but there are more details on that available on k12leaders.com. And now we'll take a look at what the readout is from L.V. Blad on and EdWeek on Biden's State of the Union address last night. So this is from EdWeek and as well as other sources. In his State of the Union address Thursday night, President Biden outlined an ambitious agenda for K-12 education, calling for significant investments to boost teacher pay, expand early childhood education, and support pandemic recovery efforts. Biden framed his proposals as critical for maintaining American economic competitiveness, stating, quote, "To remain the strongest economy in the world, we need the best education system in the world." On teacher compensation, the president urged states to use federal funding to give all public school teachers a raise, saying, quote, "We can all agree good teachers merit a raise." While he did not specify details, proposals are pending in Congress to establish $60,000 as a minimum teacher salary nationwide. Turning to early education, Biden called on lawmakers to provide access to pre-K for all 3 and 4 year olds. Citing research, he said children who attend pre-K are nearly 50% more likely to finish high school and go on to earn a college degree. The president also touted his administration's efforts to promote tutoring, summer learning programs, and career and technical education pathways as part of the pandemic recovery agenda unveiled in January. He spotlighted the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which has helped eliminate student debt for about 800,000 teachers and other public service workers since he took office. In emotional moments, Biden recognized two guests related to gun violence in schools: Keenan Jones, a teacher whose debt was forgiven, and Jasmine Cazares, whose 9-year-old sister was killed in the Uvalde school shooting last year. He renewed calls for an assault weapon ban and universal background checks. The Republican response was from Senator Katie Britt, whom Republicans have branded America's mom as she sat at her kitchen table. Her focus dwelt on border security and government spending. America's mom didn't mention education. And Susie, back to you.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing what happened on television last night. We have a couple more here. Ohio has released the results of its Science of Reading survey, which we actually talked about the Science of Reading a couple of days ago as well, paving the way for new curriculum requirements starting next year that align with evidence-based reading instruction. You can read more about that on the 74.org or find a link to the story on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And I actually have another article that I'm going to dive into a little bit more deeply. It's about teachers not being prepared for today's school climate. It's written by Lisa Macau, and it's on district administration. So that one. It goes on to talk about perennial problems such as staffing issues. Nope, that was the one I just read. You want me to read it again? Oh, why new teachers are not prepared for today's school climate. Building the social emotional competence of prospective educators and their ability to support their students should begin in college coursework. but it requires more than a one-and-done approach. And this is written by Dr. Lisa Macau, and she's an adjunct associate professor in the University of Richmond School of Professional and Continuing Studies. The state of the teaching profession, from teacher burnout and record numbers of resignations to fewer young people pursuing education degrees, continues to dominate the headlines. The real news may be those rare educators who have been at the same school or even in the same classroom for 20 or more years. What's their secret? Why have they lasted in a job that is no longer appealing to so many? Take a closer look at these longtime educators, and you'll likely see that they have high job satisfaction because their fundamental needs are being met. They feel valued by their colleagues and administrators. They have a strong network to support them. They are prepared to handle whatever comes their way, and they have the autonomy to grow as a teacher, ensuring that they can adapt to meet their students' needs and achieve school-wide goals simultaneously. So why has the system failed others who are fleeing the classroom or not even considering careers in education? I believe the current and future teachers are not well prepared for the realities of the classroom, particularly from the social-emotional angle that is fundamental for both their own and their students' success. Building the professional social-emotional competence of prospective educators and their understanding of how to support their students should begin in college coursework. But it requires more than a one-and-done approach. The professional development must be prioritized and re-envisioned for those working in the classroom to ensure all teachers have the grace and space to foster practical social-emotional skills that enable them to excel professionally and be personally satisfied in their chosen career. The positive impact of well-implemented social-emotional skill programs on students is well documented. Such programs help students develop skills like problem-solving, self-regulation, impulse control, and empathy. These skills are key to achieving academic success, improving classroom environments, and minimizing bullying and other negative social behaviors. Social emotional skills translate beyond the classroom, too. They help students in everyday life when it comes to making productive decisions and becoming successful members of their community. During my 19-year career, I've seen how educators are expected to lead social emotional programming and be social emotional role models for their students and colleagues. They are also expected to know how to use social emotional skill development curricula, embed social emotional skills into academic instruction, and collaborate effectively with caregivers to build family engagement. But that's a lot to ask of educators who may not have had the opportunity to hone their own social emotional skills in preparation for college or their teaching career. And so it goes on to say there must be a stronger connection between certification requirements, what is taught in college coursework concerning the realities of the classroom, what is expected of teachers, and how they are supported in their classrooms to meet these expectations. According to one report, the overwhelming majority of teacher education programs in 49 states did not address any of the five core social emotional learning dimensions. There is a distinct need, according to a Learning Policy Institute study, to foster the social emotional skills of teachers to prepare them to support the needs of their future students. Teacher prep programs are now beginning to understand the importance of embedding social emotional skill development content into coursework. Some universities are even developing separate certifications for social emotional skill development. Given current and likely future challenges of meeting the diverse social and emotional needs of students in our classrooms, the existing way we support the preparation and professional development of educators simply does not prepare educators fully for the realities of the classroom, nor does it meet the most basic and psychological needs of today's teachers to ensure that educators will remain in the classroom. Strengthening the social emotional skills must begin as individuals prepare to become teachers, and it must continue after they step into the classroom and throughout their time as educators. Educators must be taught how to support their professional emotional growth, as well as develop the skills they need to share these valuable lessons with their students. But it doesn't have to be complicated. To ensure that teachers have a strong foundation, universities and school districts should consider the ABCs of integrating social emotional skill development into coursework and professional development. And she goes on to talk about the importance of agency, belongingness, and competence when it comes to getting teachers prepared to go into the classroom and being able to support their students when it comes to social emotional competencies. And then finally, she will wrap up her article by saying current educators need continual support with professional development and other strategies that encourage them to learn new skills and engage in lifelong learning. This approach will ensure that members of the teaching profession feel valued, feel that their voice matters, and feel empowered to continue making a difference in the lives of their students. So I hope that you take the time to check out that article. It's on district administration, and you can access that on k12leaders.com/breakdown.
Thank you, Susie. And so many of those findings mirror survey results we received from over 500 respondees, excuse me, about a year and a half ago here on K-12 Leaders. No, it was just a year ago, actually, when we did a survey of teachers who were dissatisfied with their jobs. So thanks for sharing that. In more news, out of West Virginia this morning, a bill advancing a bill requiring all public school classrooms to display the motto "In God We Trust" is passing in West Virginia. There is no funding provided for the placards to those schools. And meanwhile, we treated this last week as well, but the micro school in West Virginia that is closing is driving more attention on accountability for alternative education models. You can find both of those stories linked on k12leaders.com/breakdown. Colleges are experimenting with some new application questions that probe how an applicant's home life, such as caring for siblings or sick parents, may have impacted their academic journey. The Hechinger report goes into detail on that topic, and you can find that on k12leaders.com/breakdown. As we've outlined in past episodes, there are a lot of stories about states pulling back on education funding. Mark Lieberman goes into detail summarizing a lot of those situations, and you can find that link on k12leaders/breakdown or search EdWeek itself. Washington State wants to keep better track of truant students with more than 14,650 students across the state being involuntarily withdrawn for not attending school since the fall of 2020. Kelsey Turner from AOL goes into detail, and you can find a link to that article on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And then the Missouri Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has partnered with SAS, to launch a data visualization tool that tracks student and school performance and guide decision-making about effective learning strategies. That's by Kate, Lucariello, and the THE Journal. That ties in very clearly with the data advocacy pathway that the Learning Accelerator has published here on K-12 Leaders. There's some great free tools, and there may be an interesting tie-in between the work that they're doing in Missouri and what the Learning Accelerator has emphasized in their pathway. Finally, for our story for today, heads out to the Berkshires of Massachusetts in a small town of North Adams, where I happened to spend a lot of time in the 90s. And the Massachusetts Superintendent of the Year, Dr. Barbara Malkus. So, and this is brought to our attention by Eric Ofgang and the Tech and Learning publications. The original article is available on Tech and Learning, or you can find a link to it on k12leaders.com. In the small town of North Adams, Massachusetts, the public school district has embraced an unconventional approach to tackling stress and promoting well-being among students and staff. It all started a few years ago when Dr. Barbara Malkus, the district superintendent, felt the need for some self-care after the challenges of the pandemic. And she goes on to share five tips for teaching yoga in the schools. And this is And Barbara Malkus is the Massachusetts Superintendent of the Year. Malkus says, "I have to be very honest and say that my bringing forward this as an initiative in the district came from a purely selfish self-care need. This was back in 2021. We were just coming out of the pandemic. Stress levels were really high for both the adults in the district as well as for the children. Recognizing the need for social emotional learning opportunities, Malkus became interested in an organization called Breathe for Change, which trains educators in yoga, mindfulness, and other wellness practices. She became a certified yoga instructor and began offering classes to teachers and students. The response was overwhelmingly positive. Today, more than 30 educators in the district, including the football coach, are leading yoga sessions for students, staff, and community members. Malkus says, "In the beginning, you get some wigglers and squirmers and kids who don't really think this is serious for them. As time goes by, they start to recognize that, wait a minute, I see what my neighbor over there on the mat next to me is doing, and they seem to be in a good place. They're smiling afterward. They're enjoying themselves. Well, I want to do that too." The district has seen a decrease in behavioral incidents and discipline referrals since the program's implementation. Teachers report that students are better able to manage stress and focus in class after practicing mindfulness techniques. But Malkus emphasized that participation is voluntary. "Our goal is to offer. We're going to offer and figure out innovative ways to offer, but we're never going to force. We're never going to say, this is what you're going to do." But these are five tips she shares to help get things moving should you want to try this in your own district. Get creative with ways to recruit students and staff. Offer classes during the day and after school and find innovative incentives like allowing yoga as an alternative to detention. Track data on behavioral incidents, discipline referrals, and survey teacher feedback to gauge the program's impact. Remember, yoga isn't for everyone, so make it available but never force participation. Provide alternative opportunities for those not interested in yoga and mindfulness. And collaborate with teachers and be patient. Don't just prescribe a program, but get input from staff and allow time for capacity building. Don't make assumptions about who will or won't embrace yoga. Even those you might not expect could get a lot of value from the practices. The superintendent encourages other districts to be patient and collaborative when implementing similar programs and to resist making assumptions about who might embrace these practices. Don't make assumptions, Malkus concludes, because the assumption could have been, oh my teachers are never going to go for this. This is not going to work in my district. As Malkus points out, yoga and mindfulness have helped people cope with life's challenges for thousands of years. And in the District of North Adams, these ancient practices are making modern day impact on the well-being of students, educators, and the community at large. You can find that whole article at Tech and Learning by Eric Ofgang. And there's also a good conversation going on here on K-12 leaders in the belonging and well-being community with Jennifer Heston and Eileen Winnekauer. So I'd encourage you to visit K12leaders.com, join that community, and be part of the conversation.
Awesome. Thanks for breaking down those last few stories and for leaning into the article on yoga, Michael. That's great. Well, that about wraps it up for today, I think. You can tune in tomorrow for some more insights, some more laughs, and some more aha moments. Until then, we want you to keep those pencils sharp and your curiosity even sharper. This has been the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder. I'm Susie Brooks, and
Mike Bronder. Have a
we're
great
signing
day in
off for
school,
today.
everybody.
Yeah, have a great day.